Chad Malone, aka 06 from Gorik Selection Class 021, joins me on this podcast episode. Really, really excited to have him on. I've had Chad on in the past where we talked about his Star Course event and some of the other events he's done. I really like him as a person, had a great time talking with him then, and so I'm really glad to have him back on for this episode. Chad and I talked for an entire hour. We had an hour to talk, and honestly, we didn't get through everything that I wanted to get covered. So this episode does kind of end abruptly. Chad will definitely be back again to finish up this episode, but I'm releasing this one as it is, and Chad will be back in roughly 3 to 4 weeks or so. I'll have this episode together, the part two. So in that time, if you have any questions, if there's anything that you want me to ask Chad during that podcast episode, send me an email, Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at alldayruckoff.com. Hit me up on the contact page on the website. Lots of ways to reach out. Chad and I already talked about it. There's going to be another call. And if you've got questions that you want me to ask, I would love to ask them. Chad's just one of those people who's really positive. I was really, really excited when I saw him at Gorik Selection because I had no clue who's going to be doing it. You'll hear in this episode how he does and how he's processing everything and coming out of recovery from the event, as well as the things he's learned and the training he did to train up for Gorik Selection. This is an awesome podcast episode. I really hope you enjoy it. You're listening to the All Day Ruck Off podcast, episode number 126. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. This is episode number 126 with Chad Malone, where we talk about Gorik Selection. He was roster number 06. If you've got any questions, again, send me an email or hit up the contact page on alldayruckoff.com. Here it is, the episode with Chad.
I figure I'm going to get back training lightly next week. But I'm not going to do any more events for the rest of this year and probably get back into them with the first heavy that comes around our way in April. We have a heavy in April, then a team assessment, and then that crazy-ass double heavy in August. I'm going to give that a try too, see how it goes.
Awesome.
Yeah. So got next year planned, and so I'm going to change up the training a little bit. Not, I feel like at this point it's my training for selection was good as far as the active work I did. I think I shot myself in the foot because I think I was overtrained. I essentially wasn't getting enough rest. So I was doing two days, but adding in my job and the kids and everything, I was only averaging like 4 to 5 hours of sleep per night. So by the time I got to my recovery week, well, by the time I got to the end of my recovery week, I still was not completely recovered. Also, I found myself, I was taking a ton of Motrin just to get over the aches and pains of just so many miles and so little rest. As I know, and I should have known better. Well, I did know better. I just didn't care. Too much Motrin over a long period of time, it's not good. So I think at the end of it all, my body was just like, yeah, we're not going to put up with this anymore. we're quitting you. So the plan would be basically just to train smarter with better rest periods built in, even if that means maybe not training. So I was getting 6 days a weekend. So even if that means that I need to cut back and do 4 or 5 days a week in order to get the sleep, I think that's just as important as getting in the work. Well, it's one of those things, like I'm a physical therapist, so I know it, but you don't practice it. It's like a car mechanic who actually takes care of his car. Like, you never see that happen. So,
you know, those rest days just don't feel right. you know they're important. And I mean, I know rest days are important, but I find myself not, you know, working out 7 days a week, not taking them because I get stir crazy on rest days. And I know that they're needed. And that, I mean, you look at the people who are winning. I mean, when I look at races, I look at, you know, 50 mile races, I look at long triathlons, these big endurance events, and I read articles from people who win those races, and they're getting, you know, 8 hours of sleep a night. And that is so far, like, I can't even remember the last time I got close to that. That's so far away from, you know?
Yeah. Well, you get a thing is like, especially like if you're like a driven type person and you have a goal and you're like the type of person, like, I have a goal and I'm going to do what I need to do to get to it. And like you sacrifice stuff, which is, you know, that's part of life. Like, you have to sacrifice, but like, sleep really is not one of those things that you can sacrifice. But the thing is like, you kind of get used to it and you're like, all right, this is normal. So like at first I was, when I first started training, like when I set my mind and I was like, all right, I'm going to do selection and this is going to be my training program. I at first was like, well, I can operate off of 6.5 hours of sleep. So I was super strict and I would go to bed at like 8:45. I'm in the bed and I'm out cold by 9:30. My alarm will wake up at, go off at, some days it'd be 4:30, some days it'd be 5 o'clock. But then as it goes, cause the training cycle is so long, and my wife is like, oh man, you're a bum. You go to bed so early. And I'm like, all right, well, let me try to stay up just a little bit longer. You know, staying up just a little bit longer. Like, all right, I can do 5 hours of sleep tonight. I'll wake up. I'll make up for it on the weekend. But you don't make up for it. And then your body gets used to it. And you're kind of like, now that I'm like well rested and I've been getting, man, I've been crushing some sleep lately. I've been getting like 8 to 9 hours of sleep every night for like the past 2 weeks. And I was like, man, I've been living in the fog for like the past 6 to 8 months. Like, I was like, literally colors are like brighter. I'm driving and I'm not falling asleep on the road. My mood is much better. So it's like, man, and I feel good. Like, my body actually feels good and things are recovering. Like, even, you know, I've had a few knee issues in my past, but mainly from like sports, like meniscus and stuff like that. But during the training cycle, I was getting some pretty worrisome knee pain, and it was, you know, just a combination, just too many miles, not enough rest. And now that I'm getting some sleep, all that stuff is healing up and it's feeling good. So my next year is going to be kind of an experiment of the training and trying to keep up the intensity while I'm training, but built into everything will be at least 7 hours of sleep every night. And if I can, 8 hours of sleep. 8 hours of sleep is going to be hard, but definitely won't go below 7 hours of sleep, even if that means that I'm going to miss an actual training cycle or actual training session. I got to get the rest in.
It's a great plan.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, right, where, I mean, you've got some major focus points in your life. You've got your family, right, and you've got your kids, and you've got your work, and then you've got your training and your sleep. And if you neglect your work, people will hound on you and you're not going to get money. And like, that's a tangible thing. If you neglect your family, you can see the direct result right there from, you know, your kids are upset, you know, they're like, where's dad? You know, in my case, my wife is, you know, like, why are you not pulling your weight? You know, what's going on?
Yeah.
If you neglect your training, you notice, you know, your push-up numbers are dropping. But like, the easiest thing to cut is sleep, because if you cut sleep, like, no one's yelling at you. There's, you know, it's the easiest thing to cut when you've got all these things going on.
That's exactly what it is. It's easy to neglect. And like, I grew up when I was younger, I remember there was a long period, I guess my dad was like in his 30s, maybe into his 40s when he stopped doing it. But he used to wake up. We used to have a weight bench in the basement and he would wake up early and go downstairs and work out. And even when I was a kid, I was like, oh, well, you know, why does he wake up so early and do that? And he could just do it any time of the day. And, you know, when you have no responsibilities, you just work out whenever. So as a teen and in college and, you know, into my 20s, I would just work out whenever. And it's always time to work out. But then I found it wasn't until I had my the twins 3 years ago. It's like, man, if I don't get stuff done early in the morning before everybody wakes up, it's not going to happen. So waking up and getting the workout in is essential. But like we said, just as essential is you got to get the sleep, because everything falls apart if you don't sleep as well. It's like, man, your job suffers. You're in a bad mood, so the family suffers. Your performance will be good, but to a point. It literally is just to a point. And then you know you can be as tough mentally as you want, and your body is only gonna do, you know, what it can do. There's a point where your body will just shut down if you don't provide it with everything it needs. So you can eat great, you can work out, but you gotta get the rest too. And unfortunately, that's a lesson I had to learn the hard way, because I've always, you know, lived my life dealing with it. It's just like it's a toughness issue. Like I just tough my way through this, and you're just sleepy. You'll get some rest later. You got to get this done now. But, you know, you got to get the rest, man. It's real important. So that's what it'll be about. So we just have to move some things around, but we'll still get the work in and just move some things around so you get the rest and keep a balance with everything. But I'm excited, man. It was a bummer to a definite bummer to not finish selection, especially after all of the time that I put in training and obviously a lot of sacrifices. But you know, after I got over, or I'm still kind of getting over the frustration, you still get frustrated from time to time. At the end of the day, you know, it just becomes part of your journey, and you sit back and, you know, I think about, you know, Olympic athletes who they go and they train for 4 years, and then, you know, a track athlete maybe has trouble getting out of the blocks, or a gymnast stumbles, or, you know, any number of things can happen, and you go from being number one to fifth place and not even getting on the podium. And they got to wait 4 years for the next time to come around. So it's kind of a similar thing. I was really bummed because I knew that following Jason's post and everything, I was, you know, during my whole training, I was like, well, this is possibly the last time that they're going to run selection. So I'm like, all right, well, I've got to finish this, even if that means like I'm going to be the last selection finisher. Like that's where my headspace was. I've got to finish this. And so getting the, you know, not finishing, not getting the result that I trained for. And then, like, actually, at first I was like, well, you know, screw it. I'm never doing this again. Like, I don't know what went wrong. If, you know, if my body can't take this after all this training, I'm just not going to do it. That's how I felt immediately afterwards. But then 24 hours later, I was like, yeah, we got to get back in here. And then I think it was even before I got home. Yeah, I was on the airplane coming home that Jason had put out the post that it was going to be in 2021, and my gut dropped because I was like, man, maybe he'll see how excited people were for this one and he'll do it again in 2020. And he was just talking trash. And then I saw that it was like literally 2 years later, and my gut just dropped. I'm like, damn, I had to wait 2 years to get back out there. But, you know, you got to deal with the headspace, man. Cause like, you know, you can't go back in time like this. I can't go back in time and train smarter. I can't go back in time and, you know, maybe get more electrolytes or whatever my body might've needed to balance things out so that I didn't have the symptoms that I did. You know, you just can't go back in time. So there's no point in dwelling on that, but you can do a whole lot of work to prepare for the future. And 2 years is a whole lot of time to do a whole lot of work. So now I'm, you know, kind of excited about it because there's endless lessons learned just from being out there. You can take that with you for sure. And, you know, my training was not a failure as far as the work that I did. So now I know things that I can tweak and spend time, you know, use your time more efficiently. I had a lot of training sessions. Like when you look back at it, I had a lot of training sessions that were just, you know, a freaking waste of time. I spent one day. It kind of sucked. So both my grandfathers died during my train up for selection. So that was in the back of my head the whole time. But my maternal grandfather died, and we were about to leave out for the funeral. We were driving up to Michigan, and uh, so And so that day that we were about to drive out, I got done work a little bit early. So I was like, well, I'm not going to be able to train while I'm up there. So I'm going to have a hard ass training cycle before we go. And it was one of those days where it was like, should have been like 89 or 90, something like that down here. And so I go to the park and I run like 6 miles. Yeah, I ran like 6 miles worth of 800 meter repeats. And then after that, I did like an hour and a half of different movements with sandbags and stuff like that. And ended up working myself so bad that I started to show signs of like heat exhaustion afterwards. I was kind of out of it for like good 12 to 24 hours working that hard in the sun. But it was a waste of time. Like that was like a dumb training session where I could have spent that 2 hours or however long I spent out there in the sun working much smarter than I did, or even just getting some rest. So a lot of that stuff I'm going to cut out. And those are lessons that I would not have learned without this failure. So, you know, you just take it, you eat it, and you make a plan to move on. So that's what I'm working on now.
Yeah, I mean, stuff like that, because you know that if you had gone, taken that rest and not done the workout, then it would have just ate at you the whole weekend. Because I get those too, where I'm like, I need to run. I need to, you know, do a sandbag workout, you know, before we go on this trip or before we do this thing. Because if I don't, it's going to eat at me the whole time. And then you do it and you're like, man, that was a freaking waste of time. Because now I'm like, you know, I don't feel like I got a good workout in. My head wasn't right. You know, like you almost hit heat exhaustion. There's just all those things that you really, like you said, you only learn from screwing it up the first time enough times that when it comes back around again, you're like, I know I want to get this in, but the last 4 out of 4 times I did this, it sucked and it didn't help me. And it ended up, you know, hurting me in the end. So I'm going to try and take the smart road on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It was hilarious. Like how dumb I could be in training sometimes. So I went out and I had bought this Garmin, the Garmin Fenix, and you know, you have one too, don't you? I think I've seen your post. Like,
absolutely,
your Garmin, right? Yeah. So you know, it tracks like your training. What is it? Your training status. So it'd be like you know, whether it was a productive or unproductive training cycle, and so. I was probably only about two or three months into the train up when we, you know, it came into the summer. We had a really hot summer. So my Garmin just started reading all of my training cycles as unproductive because it's basically based off your heart rate. You know, how long your heart rate is up and, you know, how it comes back down is part of the equation on it. And so I kept reading it unproductive. So I'm like, well, screw this damn watch. It doesn't know what it's talking about. So I would run the watch to track my times for the training, but then I would erase the data so it wouldn't tell me that I had an unproductive training session. I was like, just because I got tired of seeing that. So I was like, man, this is yet another just dumb thing. Like it serves no purpose. So, and then on top of that, man, what you also realize just from being out there is that you can prepare the best you can and you can do all the hardest workout, but it only matters to a point. Your conditioning literally what only really matters for, I don't know, maybe the first 12 hours. And then after that, it's just like, you know, just keep going. And if your body is trained to recover and primed to recover and, you know, you're conditioned to do the miles, after that, it's just a matter of whether you can just keep your head in the game and keep going. And that's a hard task. Like that's the hard one right there. Because people have said it before on your podcast, man, like you can do a heavy and an HTL and a double heavy and everything like that. And it doesn't compare. And it's not that, you know, selection obviously is physically demanding and it's hard, but the hardest part is not the physical work. The hard part in comparison to your, you know, the casual, you know, light, tough, heavy HTL is not even so much the solitude. because I work by my, I'm by myself a lot while I work too. You know, I'm in the car driving place to place, to see my patients. But it's the fact that, you know, you're in solitude and you have nobody to commiserate with. So like if you're in a heavy and the cadre throws a 120 sandbag at you, throws something heavy at you, then, you know, you can make a face with your, you know, with the person standing next to you, with your teammate, and like, oh man, what the hell is this? And you can, you know, kind of gripe about it, and that makes you feel better a little bit, like gripe about it, joke about it, whatever. And then you get under the log and you go and you're like, all right, cool. There's nobody to do that with. So like you really just gotta, you have to eat it all yourself. You just eat it, and then you gotta get yourself to keep going. And then it's also looking at the, like you're looking at the time, and it's like, man, you have, you know, that first night comes upon you pretty fast. And then the next day you're like, all right, I gotta get to another night. And instead, you know, you want to try to keep your mind on like just doing one task at a time, but it's easy to get distracted. So it takes a lot of mental gymnastics to like keep your head in the game and what's right in front of you on top of, you know, everything that's going on. That's much harder than you can imagine. And again, one of those things like getting out there and experiencing it, whether you know, succeed or fail at the event. Number one, if you fail at it and you never do it again, then at least you know you experience that, and things literally are not as stressful after that. Like you realize, like I can deal with a pretty good amount of stress, and the things that are day to day is, you know, it's not that bad. If you do get back out there, it's like, you know, now you know what to expect, and now you know on top of the, you know, the physical training that you need to do, the kind of things that you need to have, the kind of focus you need to have next time you go back out there to deal with that, you know, with that stress, because it's going to be there and you just got to deal with it by yourself.
Yeah, man, that's interesting to hear you say that as well, because it, I mean, everyone I talk to about selection, they all say that it's unlike anything else that they've done when it comes to events. And then you know, you touched on not having anyone to commiserate with in the pain. And I actually talked to Mark, who finished, and he was saying that kind of throughout the event, it seemed like Jason or other cadre were kind of pitting you guys against each other. Hey, 06, look at him over there laughing at you while you're still working and stuff like that. When, you know, Mark was saying that he wasn't over there laughing at all. He's like, you know, they're just, you know, cadre are just out there trying to stir it. So not only do you have no one to commiserate with, not only do you not have a team, but you've got like a negative team, because these people are against you.
Yeah. If we were finished first, like there was a couple evolutions where Alex and I were finished first, and I'm like, all right, cool. Pays to be a winner, right? So that means we're going to get to stand here and take a break. And he's like, you're going to get a break, but first you have to go jog around, you know, whoever's left out there. So, you know, one time it was like, it was Mark, one time it was Hurtado, and they were like, go jog around them. And when you circle through them, you got to yell out, winning. And I'm like, oh man, you don't want to do it, but how can you can't not do it, because they're telling you to do it. But it's just like, man, that's messed up. But it's that type of stuff. They do a great job of pitting you against each other. Like my game plan actually was, I studied a whole lot of video. Not that, you know, it only helps to a point, but I watched a whole lot of video before going out there. And one thing I noticed with Doug last year is that you didn't even notice him there until he was one of the last, you know, three people left. And then it's like, oh, this guy has been there the whole time. And so that was my plan, to go out there and just like, oh, you know, pop up morning, and I kind of gray manned it all the way through. But they do a great job of pushing you to be a winner, and especially somebody, a knucklehead like me, who is super competitive, fall for it 100%. And then next thing you know, you're pushing really hard the whole time, which is, you know, it's part of the game. You gotta figure out how to manage your energy, because it's a long time to be out there. they definitely do a great job of pitting, and it's part of the game. Like you got to figure out how to deal with that.
And so it seems like that actually, you know, worked a little on you, because you're saying that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. I think that, you know, it's all a big cluster F that got me to the point physically where I had to drop. But, yeah, that was definitely part of it, because that, like I said, it was not my plan to go out there and go all, and I really wouldn't say that I went all out for anything. But I definitely put a lot into, especially like, throughout the night, the welcome party with, you know, the low crawls and the crab walks and bear crawls, that stuff. Cause I'm good at that stuff, because we do that a lot in jujitsu, and I wrestled. So things where I'm on my hands and down on the ground and using my whole body to move, I'm pretty darn good at that stuff. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm good here. If they want to see a winner, I'll show them a winner. So you just start going, and it's like, man, you lose track of time. I guess the welcome party, you know, each evolution might have been like an hour, so I don't know. You have no concept of time. But if it is an hour and you're going, you know, 75% to 80% that whole, you know, on and off that whole hour, like you're doing a lot of sprints versus, you know, the person who's in the middle might be jogging. And, you know, you got to weigh the pros and cons. It's like, right, is getting the rest at the end worth it? Or is, you know, to be in the middle and conserve your energy worth it? Like, you know, which one do you want? You know, obviously for me, I think what, you know, part of what got me, you know, we already talked about the being overtrained. I overtrained, didn't come in there at optimal conditioning, but I probably put out too much at the beginning. And it kind of all kind of spun together and got to the point where my body just was not responding anymore. I was like, I can't go. Like, all right, that's it. So lessons learned. That's what you do. You just take the lesson and you move forward.
A lot of it, like you said, I feel like it's knowing your body, because I know myself. I can go out there and I can, from running, I can run at a, you know, like a 6:45 minute mile pace, and I can hold that for, I don't know, 5-10 miles or so.
Jesus, and
it just kind of roll through it. But if I drop it down to like a 6:15, then after 3 miles, 3.5 miles, I'm burnt. I'm toast. And so you were, you know, like you said, you're doing those 800 meter sprints out there. Just a lot of it goes into like, is it really worth putting that extra like 10% on there to burn yourself out 70% quicker? Or do you just pull back a little bit, know your body, and know? And I feel like that's where those mind games really come in, because I could see myself just like that. I'm out there, you know, doing my pace. I know I can maintain this for 10 miles. And all of a sudden it's like, Cadre, you know, in your ear, they're laughing at you. Look, they're already done. Look at him over there. You know, if you just went a little bit faster, you could be there too. And then you bump it up and then you burn yourself for hours.
Yep. You got to be smart. And I've, you know, so many lessons learned. I'm the type of guy, and it's funny because as a coach, you know, when I coach my fighters and stuff, you know, I always have to tell them, it's like, man, don't look at what I do, because I'm not the brightest, but listen to what I tell you. You know that the pace is important, and you go in there and you're like, you know that it's a 48-hour endurance event. Endurance is the key word. And so the pace is important. You know, the rest is important. You know that, you know, your program is important, but I've always been the type of person who, you know, even when I was like an athlete, I always call myself like a blue collar athlete, because I never played just one sport in high school. I never did any like camps or anything like that. Never had any private training. I just always put in more work than the next guy. Whenever I won, I just put in more work. So that has been my approach for a long time, but it took me, you know, 36 years to learn. It's like, sometimes just doing more work is not always the answer. You gotta be smart about your approach and your preparation and your execution. And that's, for me, that has always been like, when I look at that, like the strategic approach to things, like that's never been something that was ever an appeal to me in any athletic pursuit. Like when I look at athletic pursuits, I always, you know, look at the guy who just crushes things. And so to go back and look, it's like, hey, like you gotta train this way now. It's a hard, I won't say a hard pill to swallow, but you know, it's one of those things, like I literally would not have ever considered that without this failure. So, you know, just another thing, like, cause you know, you have the options and failures, like you can sit back and you can, you know, cry and whine about it and sit on your pot and just never get over it and be salty about everything. You can forget about the lessons and just like jump right back out there. Like you can just do the same thing and go back out there and like, oh, well, I don't know what it was. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to train harder, go back out there. Or you can, you know, take your lessons, write them down, learn from them and have a different approach next time. And that's the best approach to take for any failure. So, and if you take that, then, cause we all have them, man, like whether it's day to day, big things, little things, like everybody has failures. And if you sit and you stew over them and you're pissed about them all the time, it's like, you know, what good does it do? Like, why even try stuff if when you do fail, which is going to happen, you just get pissed about it? I used to do that when I was like younger, like in high school and college and stuff. Like if I was in a wrestling tournament, I lost to somebody, and then you see that person who won on the podium, and then they might be in a newspaper the next Monday, and you're like, oh man, screw that guy, I'm better than him. He just beat me that day. I wasted a lot of time thinking I like that, man. And now, finally, as you know, start to get older, I lose all my hair, get a little bit wiser, and you're like, man, congrats. Like it starts also with being like positive and being happy for other people too. Like, you know, Alex and Mark and Patrick worked their asses off, man. And Hurtado too. Like these guys worked their asses off and they deserve everything. And so then, you know, then you're smart and you look at your lessons and like, well, what did they do that I didn't do? Like, maybe we all did train hard, but maybe they did something smarter than I did along the way. And take your lessons from that. Take your lessons from the cadre. Try to ask them as many questions afterwards. And then just look back at the work that you did. And you put it all together. And that's an unbeatable formula, man. You do all that, and the next time around, it's like, how can you not improve? Not to say that next time is going to be a success, but how can you not improve if you take all of that and put it together and get a new product? It's going to be better, without a doubt.
That's such a great way to put it all too. And I mean, I think you're absolutely right that a lot of it just comes with age and experience, because I mean, I used to, you know, wallow and stew over stuff too. And then after you've done that like a dozen times, you realize that it doesn't actually help anything. And it's another one of those things, like through experience, you know, maybe if I spend like less time being upset about this and more time just heading back to the gym, like something would change.
This stuff is, but you know, on the other note, it's like, I guess, and it's kind of a balance too, because you can't, on one end, you know, if you're going to take risk, you have to also accept the risk of failure, but you can't be happy with failure, because if you're cool with losing all the time, then you're not going to be a winner. Like you can be okay with failing, but you can't be happy with it. Like you got to be shooting to win. And so I try to teach my son this, and it's funny though, because my son is like kind of the opposite of me. Like he turned 7 soon, and I've always been super competitive. It was growing up, it was me and I have one older brother and one younger brother, and we were literally, everything was a competition, from eating to brushing our teeth to fighting to getting dressed first. Everything was a competition. And my son is so laid back, and he just recently got to the point where he like doesn't want to lose, but still nowhere near the point I was when I was his age. So it's kind of weird, because for me now, I'm teaching him, it's like, hey man, you got to set yourself up to win, and winning feels good, right? But you know, if you're gonna lose, it's like, you know, that happens too. So you got to, you know, you got to deal with that also. So I'm trying to teach him that, but he's so cool sometimes. It's like, man, he just doesn't care. Sometimes he just shrug his shoulder. And I'm like, oh man, I don't know what to do with you. I just want to shake you sometimes. Like, I need you. So that balance, I guess he kind of has that natural balance, and maybe I should learn a little bit from him. But, you know, either way, you got to deal with it. You got to deal with it. Got to be competitive. Got to take risks. And then you got to learn from those failures. And sometimes, man, as a coach also, we used to have one fighter. It happens sometimes. Sometimes you get some fighters, man, and they win. Like, they win a lot. And for whatever reason, maybe they got lucky. Maybe they're athletic. Maybe they're just risk takers, and those risks pay off for them oftentimes. And they win, but they're not getting better, and they never learn a lesson. So then you're like, all right, well, I hate to see my guy lose, but if it takes a loss for him to learn a lesson, then he's just going to have to take a loss. And sometimes it's like that too, because even for my experience with this past selection class, I wonder, you know, would I have learned my lesson about training and balance and just being smart about everything if I had a completed it? Like, maybe these lessons were that important for me to learn where this needed to happen. It's not really like I was saying it, because what happens, happens. But sometimes sometimes you got to have, I think Jason said this, he's like, sometimes, you know, you learn the most from those toughest failures. If all you're doing is succeeding, you know, you're only getting the results that you want. Sometimes you got to get what you don't want to learn how to deal with that. It's a big thing.
It is. And I mean, like I mentioned, I just talked to Mark yesterday or the day before. And I mean, this was his fourth selection attempt.
Damn.
That's right. So he did three attempts, and Jason told him, I don't want to see you back. I don't want to see your face here again at selection for 2 years. You need to think about this and train for this and make this a priority. And I don't want to see you back for 2 years. And then he came back. And I mean, that's
hardcore. Like him, Patrick, I think this was Patrick's third attempt. Mm-hmm. And Jala, man, Jala Shaw, she's a freaking word. And like you almost, well, so there's a couple of things. I was talking to a friend of mine about this yesterday. It's like, one thing is that like we compare ourselves so much to people, and even knowing this is not a good thing, man. But you had Doug last year, you know, his first try, he finishes it. And then Mark previously, and you sit back and you look at these guys, as tough as they are and as hard as trained and everything, they deserve it. But that's not the normal for Patrick or Jala to keep coming back time after time after time. Like, you're training for 6 months, time after time, and you're going out there, and that's a painful freaking 48 hours. Like, that, man, that it hurts. Everything hurts. There's, you know, dirt everywhere, gravel everywhere, you're wet, you're uncomfortable the whole time, everything hurts. And you're choosing to go back, and he did team assessment too. So, you know, he's essentially been in this experience 5 times, and Patrick 3 times, and Jala 5 times, I think this was for her. Like, and you keep coming back, how much more toughness does that take? That's like a whole nother level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's just, in my opinion, it even makes it almost more impressive, because it's not fun to not finish something or to, you know, not win something. And then to take that, turn it around and go out there again 4 times that takes a lot of heart and dedication to do.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. Like that rings home to me so much. And again, one of those lessons that I'm just now learning, but like I started reading, I read this book this year about this trek up Mount Everest, and I forget what the book's title was, but in the book they talk about, you know, how much training it takes to get to, how much training and money it takes to, you know, even get to the point where you're going to take an excursion to try to go up Mount Everest. And then how many times, especially like the first pioneers, those people tried and failed multiple times, and sometimes they'll try and fail, and like their climbing partners will die, and they're stuck on the mountain and all of the adversity they go through. And these people take multiple time attempts to get up this mountain, like spend thousands and thousands of dollars and thousands of hours and days just to have the opportunity to summit this mountain. And as I'm reading this book, I was actually reading the book as I was training for selection. I'm like, man, that's bullshit. Like, you got to get this stuff done the first time. Like that has been my approach on a lot of things. You know, when I went to go test for my black belt with Voice, you're paying for this trip. You've been training for it this whole time. Like, you're only going to do this once. And you go and, you know, fortunately for that time, you know, you go take the test and you pass it. But then that start in your head, that starts to become your precedence. Like, you know, everything is the first time. Like, anything that I'm going to work for, if I put this time in, it's going to be the first time. I'm going to succeed. But it doesn't always happen like that. And then what comes out of it is, do you have the fortitude to, you know, dust yourself off, learn your lesson, and go back? A lot of people get screwed up, though, off of, like, your pride also. It's, you know, like, oh, you know, I told everybody I was training for this event. I told everybody I was going to crush it. I was going to go out there and come back, and I'm going to have this patch, and it's going to be so glorious. And then you don't. And then it's like, all right, well, what do I do now? Well, you get over it, and you deal with it, and you go back out there. And I tell you what, though, the GRT community is something different. If you allow it, the GRT community actually, like, you know, they help you through this, man. Like, in all of my sporting endeavors, like, it's always been like there's a winner or a loser. Nobody cares about the loser. You know, the second and third place person on the podium after a tournament, nobody wants an interview with that person. Everybody wants to talk to the gold medalist. And that's the person who gets in the newspaper. That's the person everybody talks about around town. And so after my failure at selection, like, all these people are like getting messages and, you know, congratulations. Well, the first one I went to the finish, like, the next day we go to the finish, and they're like people who I don't even know. Like, I don't see them, you know them from Joe Schmo. And they're like, oh, congratulations. And the guys who finished are sitting right there in the chair eating pizza and drinking beer. I'm like, why are you telling me congratulations? Go tell them congratulations. They finished. And then it kept coming. And I'm like, well, what is going on here? It's kind of weird. And you know, in my athletic history, to wrap my head around, is like, man, but you see that people value your passion and the hard work that you put in and your grit. And it's more of a slap in the face to those people who, like, actually support you to have a failure and give up and go and rot, you know, hide away in your hole, than it is to, you know, take it on the chin, go back, train smart, and go back out there.
Yeah. And it's interesting you bring that up, because, you know, I get people emailing me for guests, and even between the time that I sent you the email saying, hey, do you want to do another call, and today, I've had multiple people hit me up on Instagram, on, you know, Facebook Messenger, on all that stuff, saying, hey, you got to get 06 on.
It's crazy, man. And I'm like, man, I didn't do shit. Like, I didn't finish. And I tell my wife this, I'm like, man, I didn't finish. But people, like, say that they're inspired and, like, congratulations. So I'm like, well, I appreciate it. I truly do. But, man, I didn't do anything. Like, so it's just, I mean, it's cool. It's awesome. And if all I have to do is put forth effort and do what I normally do, and that inspires somebody to do better, that's awesome. Like, go do better. And guess what? I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it again next year in team assessment, and we'll go back out there next time there's selection. And, you know, I have a different outlook. Like, I'm not going to go at it, you know, like, I know I'm going to finish, but I know I'm going to, you know, bust my ass and do everything I can smarter this time to make it through. And if that helps somebody out from watching the live stream, then that's pretty dope. Like, I've never done anything where you can, you know, put out some effort and not get the result that you want, and people, you know, are telling you congratulations and sending you messages afterwards. So it's really cool. I've literally never seen that in any other community outside of GoRuck.
Yeah, it's really, really pretty unique. And now that you mentioned, I'm thinking back to, you know, back when I was doing Muay Thai a bunch and, you know, when I was playing basketball, you know, like all that stuff. And, you know, I can't think of a single time.
You don't see it. Like even in jiu-jitsu, like jiu-jitsu is a pretty, you know, you're close. Like jiu-jitsu is a family also. Maybe even closer than the GRT world, because you see your training partners, you know, multiple times a week, is intimate. You're in close, trying to choke each other out, armbar each other, yada yada. But it's not the same level. Like we have, we have guys, so they're going tests for their black belt and they'll fail. And you'll, you know, send them kind of regards, like, you know, man, we're still proud of you. Keep your head up. You know, you did great. You'll get it next time. But that's not the same type of response. That's like a sympathetic, empathetic, you know, consoling response, like to keep them in there, because you are still proud of them, and but you're bummed that they didn't do good.
You're not celebrating them.
Yeah, you're not celebrating them. So it's completely different. So it's really unique. And I tell you, I legitimately, you know, immediately afterwards, after everything went to shit, and I was like, you know, I had to call it. I'm not doing this again. This is dumb. It's not worth it. If this is how my body responds after putting in that much work, you know, my body's not going to, you know, it's not going to get through this. Now, I wouldn't say I was like really salty, but just logically think, I'm like, you know, if this is how my body responds after putting all that work in, it's not going to happen. So I think I told Doug that right afterwards. I told Jason that, and I was sure of it. You know, took a shower that first 48 hours. Like my everything was beat up. My not even like my muscles, but my system was completely out of whack. But it literally only took 24 hours for me to start to wrap my head around going back out there. And a big part of it was, you know, all the messages and stuff. And then seeing Patrick and Mark finishing and knowing how long they had been working, you know, how many times they've been through selection to get there. You know, it's like, all right, you can't be that type of guy who tries things once, fails, and then just gives up on it. Like this is just part of your process. It's part of your journey now. And yes, it is what it is from there on.
I mean, when I saw you out there, I had no idea that you were signing up for selection. And I don't think we talked about the last time, you know, we had a phone call together. And when I saw you out there, I was like, no way.
Like, yeah.
Is he out there?
Flip one time.
And so then I'm, you know, going through the tough group looking, and there's people asking, like, you know, who's 06? And then someone's like, oh, I think he owns a gym. I was like, yeah, he owns a gym. I was like, it's him. I was so excited. To see you out there.
Yeah. I, again, in all of my virtual research, I remember one of the selection classes, I think it was Doug's, last year's class, where Blaine and Jason were talking before and talking about how people, you know, post about how they're training for selection and put all their information out there so early. And so, you know, I kind of took that to heart, and I was like, well, number one, I'm not the type of guy who's going to post, you know, I'm training for selection, everybody see me. I would never do that, but I do post my training videos. I had been posting my training videos up until the point where I decided I was going to sign up for selection, and I stopped posting. And actually one of my teammates like called me out, like, hey, what happened to your, you know, your 5 a.m. workout videos? And I'm like, I'll get back to it eventually, in the back of my head thinking that eventually will be after selection. So I didn't want to put it out there and have that be potentially something that could be used against me during the event. So I kind of kept that to myself. My teammates knew that I was going to do it, obviously, because, you know, I'm teaching class, and then instead of sparring after class, I throw my, you know, ruck on and go out and ruck until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. But other than that, definitely didn't put it out there or anything. It's just one of those things, you know, I'm going to go at this with the support of my family and teammates, and, You know, if you know, you know. If you don't know, you'll figure out once you see it on the video.
That's right.
So, yeah.
And so can we talk about that for a second? I mean, your training schedule, you've got, I mean, you have a family, you've got kids.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's, I know, you know, Doug does as well. You know, some people do, some people don't, but it's, I would say it's tougher to find time to train when you do have kids. So I'm curious what your week looked like, how you balanced that with family and, you know, how you felt from all of it.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I think some things as far as timing lined up perfectly. So I live in DC, and DC, a public school, has pre-K 3. So during the like the most intense portion of my training session, my daughters went off to pre-K 3, which meant all my kids were at the same school. So I didn't have to do a bunch, my wife and I didn't have to do a bunch of separate drop-offs. We could just do one drop-off and cover all the kids that way. So that helped out. But for the most part, I teach classes Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. And those are evening classes. And then I have my regular class. I have my regular job, you know, Monday through Friday, every day of the week, 9 to 5, just like everybody else. So what I would do is I would wake up either 4:30 or 5 o'clock, depending on how long my session was going to be. And I do my workout. I had a couple of training plans that I was working through, some ruck-based training plans. And I think I did like 4 to 5 8-week cycles. And then four 8-week cycles. And then one of them was I combined two training programs. So I did one that was a 6-week cycle, and I combined that with the last 6 weeks of my 8-week cycle right before my 1 week off. So I would do that every morning, Monday through Thursday. And then Friday night would be my long training night. And for that time, I would have like a 4 to 6 hour session where I do, you know, a long ruck, you know, with a heavy ruck, or I did the PT test a number of times. And then after the PT test, I do kind of like a welcome party type workout, or maybe just a workout that I saw that Jason posted that looked pretty intense. I do that. Saturday, I would generally take off. I was fortunate enough to have one of my training partners took over my Saturday class, so I didn't have to teach on Saturday, so I could take Saturday off. And then eventually Sunday kind of morphed into a long run day, so I would go for me, what will be a long run. So like a 10 mile run, I think the farthest I did was 10 miles. So I go 8 to 10 miles on a Sunday, just to, you know, not hard, just to, you know, build my cardiovascular system up. And then, I think one thing I did do for the PT test that paid off a lot is that I never trained to run 5 miles. I trained the whole time to run 6 miles. So when the test did come, you know, to run 5 miles on flat surface was pretty easy. So, and we have a lot of hills here in DC and Virginia. So I would usually train at some place that has, you know, some hills and stuff, knowing that we were going to be at Jack's Beach and there will be sand to deal with. And I figured, well, if I can't find sand here, I can easily find a hill. So I would go someplace that has a hill and try to compensate that way. So I would have the morning sessions, go to work. A typical Monday, have my morning session, go to work, pick up my kids, drop them off, get to the gym, teach my classes, throw on my ruck, go for 6 miles. Will be my Monday night routine. Come home, get some sleep. I would try to get 6 hours of sleep, but like I said, it usually ended up being 4 to 5 hours. Wake up from that and do another training session. And it was basically rinse and repeat like that for 6 months. My wife helped out a ton as far as, like, you know, Saturdays, if I was burnt, she would just take the kids out to the park or something like that. And I didn't have to do too much thinking. I just grab my water bottle and go along with them. She'd take care of the bedtimes. She'd get them ready in the morning if my training session ran long. is kind of family wise, it became a kind of like a teamwork type thing. Work wise, as far as with the gym, a lot of, you know, my training partners, everybody knew what my goal was. So everybody was willing to help out. So that was really cool. And then my day job, I don't really care too much about my day job, man. I work a day job because I have bills to pay. But ideally, I'll just be, you know, if I can get to the point where I'm rucking and doing jujitsu all day, like, that's all I really want to do. So my day job, man, I go there and I do what I got to do and then I leave. I do enough to stay out of trouble at work. And that's it. Like, I do my job. I get my patients better. But, you know, if I have to, if my paperwork suffers or, you know, I got to leave a little bit early or start a little bit late, if I can make that work, then I will make that work. My day job, again, I'm one of those type of guys, man. I got to pay bills, and that's why I work that job.
I mean, I hear getting bills paid is kind of important.
Yeah. It's kind of important. And I don't think you get around that, but especially when you got three kids in the house. So
yeah, people try. I don't think it works out.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't work out for them. You can't do the fun things. That's my thing. Like, I work so I can do the fun things in life. Like, I, until those fun things can become my work, you know, so that's why I opened up my gym. Cause I want that. That's my fun thing. I want that to become my day job. Rucking is quickly becoming something else that I, you know, have become passionate about and like to do as much as I can. So, you know, I don't see myself making money off of rucking anytime soon, but, you know, if I can figure out a way to do it, I damn sure will.
I love it. And it sounds like your wife, I mean, really helped out a ton. What was her initial thought about selection when you approached her with it?
So she prodded it out of me, just like everybody else who does these things, man. Your family, they know you do crazy stuff. So I'm the type of person where I'm not happy if I don't have, a physical challenge. Like, I can have other types of challenges in life. But if I don't have a physical challenge going on, I'm not happy. I'm not a happy person. You don't want to be around me. When we finished the HTL back in April, and, you know, I was recovering from that, and I'm sitting down, and I can't remember exactly what it was. My wife and I were watching TV, and the kids are around, and we're talking about the HTL and how crazy it was, and she was like, you know, so what's next? And so I take a deep breath, and I'm like, there's this thing called selection. And she's like, what's that? I'm like, well, it's 48 hours, kind of like the HDL, only there's no break in between, and you do it by yourself, and there's more weight. And here, watch this video. They basically just try to kill you the whole time. And so she was like, all right. That was her response. All right. And so you know, I kept abreast as far as, like, you know, everything I was going to be doing for training, you know, like, you know, these are going to be my morning sessions. I didn't ask them to cancel anything on my behalf. You know, if we went on vacation, I would just take my running shoes and I would take my ruck and my sandbag. You know, we go to Virginia Beach every summer for vacation. We have some weddings and stuff that we went to. You know, I take my ruck, I take my boots, my running shoes, and my sandbag.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Ruck Off podcast. Really hope you enjoyed this episode. A ton of great information and content in there from Chad. Really just happy to have him back on. And it's exciting to know he'll be back for a third time. If you want links to anything we talked about in the episode, head on over to the show notes, alldayruckoff.com/126. And in addition, if you've got questions you want me to ask him in the follow-up podcast episode, you can leave a comment there. That's a great spot to ask a question. I'll make sure to ask it to him in the podcast episode. If you enjoy the All Day Ruck Off podcast, I would truly appreciate your support. You can support for free by leaving reviews on either Apple Podcasts, on Facebook, links to those in the show notes, or just search for All Day Ruck Off. You can support by buying things in the online store, alldayruckoff.com/store, or you can support through Patreon, patreon.com/alldayruckoff. Where you'll get access to some bonus content as well. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode with Chad, and I can't wait to talk to you next week. As always, don't forget, Attitude is everything. Keep yours positive and train hard, rock harder.